Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. This summer, the Parliament of Catalonia voted 68-55 to ban bullfighting in that region of Spain. If you read about this in an animal rights publication, this would have been heralded as a great triumph for the animal rights movement. And indeed, relative to the bulls, it most certainly would have been. On the average, approximately 250,000 bulls are killed or wounded worldwide in bullfighting. And this is not a humane sport. The bulls are first weakened, stressed by being chased, stabbed with lances, and then when they are thoroughly confused, bleeding, possibly blinded by pain, they're further confused and terrorized by the waving flags and the matadors. In the final step, the matador pierces the bull's heart with his sword. Or rather, the matador is supposed to pierce the bull's heart with his sword. In fact, matadors are so notoriously poor at doing this, in several countries the bull is taken from the ring and humanely killed. So a vote that bans bullfighting is certainly to be viewed in a positive light in terms of its effect on the bulls. But like so much animal-related legislation, this legislation also has political overtones. So were you to read about this legislation in a national news magazine, as I did, or in one that focuses on politics, you would see it in a completely different light. A vote against bullfighting is seen as a vote by the Catalonian Parliament as a vote against Spain. This is an independent region of Spain, and they like their independence. Bullfighting was a favorite sport of General Franco, who was the champion of nationalism in Spain. So a vote against bullfighting is a vote against Franco's Spain. So in that regard, we can say it has nothing to do with bulls at all, and everything to do with politics. But this isn't new. The article I read gave a little bit of the history of bullfighting. In the 8th century, it was the sport of kings and other aristocrats who would fight bulls from horseback. This practice then spread to Central and Latin America, and then later to France. But in the 18th century, King Philip V, who in the article I read was described as squeamish, but to tell you the truth, I think he should have been King Philip the Schemish. King Philip, he persuaded the Pope to forbid Spanish noblemen from taking part in bullfighting. I don't consider that squeamish, and I don't consider that bull-loving. I consider that a very, very smart political move. If you're a king, you depend on your aristocracy to support you. You can't have them going out and getting themselves gored by bulls, because you might need them. On the other hand, you don't want to be known as the king who spoiled their fun, so what better way to do it than have the Pope do it? In that way, bullfighting made the transition from being a sport performed by the aristocracy to being one performed by the lower classes for the benefit of the aristocracy. And they label it as some sort of existential battle, and it's tied up in machismo. We see the same kind of contradictions here that we see in other animal-related issues. One of the top matadors is a man who only performs to women. Because, as he puts it, the only balls in the arena have got to be mine and the bull's. Now, I don't know about you, but to me, this does not sound like a guy who's got a really firm grip on his masculinity. But so it is. You know, it's a matter of perspective. And so we started out with The upper class is pitting themselves against the bulls for sport. And then when it was deemed that their lives were too valuable, the sport was relegated to the lower classes for the amusement of the upper classes. And then to justify it, the lower classes saw it as evidence of their superiority. I think of this in terms of leadership and those two definitions of leadership. It used to be that the definition of a leader was lead by example. That was the person who went out there, did it, took the risks, accepted the responsibilities, even death. And then over time, that changed. The leader became someone who stood on the sidelines, barked out commands. Leadership by remote. And that's pretty much where we are now. And the animals are paying the price for this. So think about this the next time you read about some legislation that seems to be a real boon for the animal species. Get the backstory. Get the history. Is this really about animals, or is it all about us yet again? Does that mean we should stop? Does it mean we shouldn't care? Does it mean we shouldn't try to get legislation passed that will help the animals? Not at all. Not at all. But it does mean that for those who write such legislation, they need to be aware of all sides of it. They need to be aware of not only what is happening to these animals, but also what these animals symbolize. Because if you don't understand what the animals symbolize to the various parties involved, as we've seen time and time and time again throughout history, you'll wind up using the animal's name, the bull, the wolf, the pit bull, the tiger. You'll wind up using the same name. But you won't be talking about the same thing at all.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore, by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.